court appointed is meant to be for entertainment purposes and basic legal information only.
Nothing in this podcast should be considered as legal representation nor legal advice.
Only use the knowledge presented herein to dazzle your friends or possibly win bar trivia.
Dr. Lawyer, idiot chief. For my life with songs of grief, with the yellow fear and fearless eyes. For all the times I've tried.
Welcome to Court Appointed, two dudes' perspective on legal frivolity. I'm your co-host, Mike Meadows. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurl. And I am just a dude.
Tommy, I can tell you are itching to give an update.
Well, I'm just sitting here. You can't see it on the podcast, but I'm just sitting here shaking my head at the latest that came out about Equifax.
Is that all? Is it? Beep, 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 beep.
It's an update. It's an official update. just like you figure, some of the top executives have left the company. They retired. And then that CEO that gave that terrible thing, the video about, oh, we've been hacked. We really feel bad. We were here to protect your data. We failed. Well, that guy, he decided to go too. And, oh, besides all the bonuses that he already took from last year, he also has a $143 million retirement package that he takes with him.
That's a good chunk of change.
Yeah, yeah. Boy, he's being penalized having to leave that job and take his $143 million.
Well, if I got to retire, I got to retire.
Yeah, that's really tough. Boy, I tell you what, these guys, nobody ever learns. They just keep going. Somehow they ought to do something to that group, and those people ought to have to pay. It's just not right. It's just not right.
I know. I mean, you're not for bigger government, but don't maybe some governmental oversight into that or some actual government oversight that works?
Well, I just think if the law isn't already there, then there needs to be some laws enacted that make the individuals of corporations that do these kind of things, that make them responsible. You know, like we talked about, the European over there, they're trying to enact laws that will pertain to the data breaches like that. But around here, we got nothing. They're just going to walk on it. And it's just too bad. And it was a patch that they were told about 2 or 3 months prior to this incident is what they needed to apply. But did they apply it? Nah, they didn't apply it.
There's going to be Tommy Smurls popping up everywhere. God help us all. Identity theft is what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that would be bad. Too many of them popping up. But, I mean, it just should have been automatic that they have to give everybody credit monitoring for life.
That would have been good.
That's just what they ought to do for what they did.
You know, if they had actually done that, I would have considered them to be somewhat of a good Samaritan.
Well, that's funny that you should mention that.
Why is that?
Well, we had some posting on our Facebook page, and it pertained to Good Samaritan laws and whether certain things pertain to it or not.
Oh, yeah. I remember those posts. There were several of them. I believe there was some one by Anderson Wells, by Jeffrey Arndt, and Ryan Bell, all in separate postings.
Yeah.
I remember correctly. Not that I've...
Not that you looked?
No, I just seem to remember that.
How do you remember it if you didn't look?
Well, I it's a natural course of Facebooking.
Oh, okay. I got you.
So... Maybe we should talk about Good Samaritan law today.
Well, I think there's a lot of ambiguity and a lot of urban legend and things like that pertaining to that.
And we're going to add to that.
Yeah, because at least I will, because I don't know anything I'm talking about. I got an opinion on it.
the problem when you get into a topic like this is Good Samaritan law is that it varies state by state by state. So what flies in one state might not fly in another. So really, I think the best way to approach this for our podcast is kind of just talk about Good Samaritan law in general, what it is, and some of the different terms that are in some of the laws. Not necessarily give you black and white answers. It's like, hey, here's what you can do. Here's what you can't do. So let me just
stress. We don't want to advocate that so that people go out and blame it on us. Remember, yeah. It's just for fun and bar trivia.
Let me stress again that do not take these Good Samaritan law suggestions to heart. We're just kind of discussing it today. So. Good Samaritan law offers protections to someone who basically gives reasonable assistance to others. That seems like a simple definition, doesn't it?
Seems pretty simple.
And a couple of the...
Those are the ones that get you.
A couple of the key points in there, you got to understand, is reasonable assistance. reasonable. That word creeps into almost every facet of law, in case you haven't noticed.
Somehow reasonable and humans don't seem to mix.
That's they don't. That's otherwise I wouldn't have a job, probably. Reasonable humans, I deal with unreasonable humans daily.
Yeah, there's a lot of those. They're all on the road driving, too.
That's right.
I deal with unreasonable humans driving to and from work all the time. I have to yell at them and tell them who's number one.
So, as I said, the laws regarding Good Samaritan laws, they differ from jurisdiction to jurisdiction. And globally, they're generally derived from common law principles or places that develop from English law, because it's kind of a common law derivation. Now, the term Samaritan, as you might know, comes from a biblical parable. The parable talks about a traveler who was traveling from Jerusalem to Jericho and was robbed by some bandits and left for dead. And there were two people that came along separately. The first came by, was a priest, and he didn't help the guy. And the second was a Levite, and he didn't do anything to help. And I guess a Levite at that time was like someone kind of highly respected in that area.
I always thought that Levite sells cartoon balloons in town.
I didn't think that's Levi.
Oh, okay, is it?
Is it Levi?
It fit the ski. The
I'm goof. Really trying to think now if it's actually
Levi.
Is it Levi?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
And he named his child Jesus.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was.
that's another Elton John reference. That's two in 2 weeks.
That is. Why did I think that was a Bon Jovi song?
Bon Jovi, man.
I don't know.
You're living on a prayer.
Something. Well, anyway, the priest and the Levite, they do nothing to help. But then the third man comes along.
It sounds like three cats walking into a bar.
Yeah, a little bit. And then the third guy comes along, and he's a Samaritan. He's from the area called Samaria. And he stopped and helped the guy and basically nursed the guy back to health. And like I said, the Levite was a well-respected member in the community, and the priest was as well. And the Samaritans were looked down upon, like a lesser people. So it was, the whole parable was that the Good Samaritan stops to help somebody who's in need.
And yeah, so I think in that time, Jewish people actually hated Samaritans.
Yeah, I believe they did. Although now I think there are some Samaritans that are Jewish. So I don't know.
Well, yeah. I think that was a different tribe. They were different. They were like 10 tribes that made up that area or something like that at that time. Back in the biblical days, and they were one of them.
I was not aware of this.
Yeah.
And I did not actually research the 12 tribes of Israel prior to this podcast.
Well, I was looking up some information there about where Samaritan comes from and everything. It's not like Samsonite luggage or something. It wasn't the guy that came by and had a Samsonite suitcase, and so they called him a Samaritan.
So where did Samsonite luggage come from?
Just that's the way my brain works. That's where it went to from Samaritan. I don't know. You've asked about these twisted rabbit holes before. You know better than to ask about them. They're just there. That's just what pops in my head. It's a word. I have a severe case of word association. People say things, and another word pops in my head to go right along with it.
Yeah, it's pretty tubular.
Bells.
So. There's some other legal theories that interplay with Good Samaritan law. One is the duty to rescue, the right to refuse treatment, and parental rights also have some interplay in there as well. So when you're talking about being a Good Samaritan and being protected from helping people, there's these different theories that kind of interplay with it. So in all 50 states have some sort of Good Samaritan law in them. And the basic public policy reason behind this law, and whenever we talk about laws, and I don't know if you notice this or not, but I always talk about public policy because you want to know what's the public policy behind this law. Why do we have it? And if you think about it, it actually makes pretty good sense. There's actually a rational reason for it.
I'm glad there's a law that makes pretty good sense and makes rational reason.
Yeah, because we want people to be able to help each other freely without fear of getting sued or some sort of criminal charges for helping somebody on the side of the road that has some sort of issue.
Especially in this litigious society we live in today.
Yeah. So, generally, there's no crime or exposure for failing to act and failing to help somebody along the side of the road. So, you could be like the priest or you could be like the Levite and not help them for the most part, and you're not going to suffer any kind of criminal penalty for it. Now, there are some states that say you have a duty to call 911. It can actually be like a misdemeanor if you don't do that. But I believe that's kind of the minority approach to it. So, and again, you know, I would check with your own jurisdiction rather than just passing somebody by and not calling for help. I mean, you should call for help. That's the right thing to do.
Well, so. I mean, they didn't have 911 in those days, so... They had a good excuse, but, you know, there's no excuse that you can't whip out your cell phone and call 911 now.
But for the most part, you have no duty to really kind of, and I don't think any state has this for just your general person off the street. There's no duty to actually go over and render first aid or CPR or anything like that. And if you don't do it, you're going to get criminally charged. There's no laws that make you do that. But I think the minimum thing is that basically you do, in some states, have to call 911. Just, you know, the bare basic common courtesy.
Well, you got nowadays, everybody just turns their phone around and starts filming it, starts videoing it.
Yeah.
Rather than call 911 or offering help, they just get it on video so they can post it and go viral. Everybody wants to go viral.
Sometimes it's actually a good thing when they have the video of it.
Well, yeah.
Because it helps you if you have a case that results from it. It's like, oh, thank goodness there's video.
Yeah, some like the police brutality things or things like that they've Absolutely. Captured shootings on there and stuff like that. But what I'm saying is when people do that in lieu of any actual help and the person suffers as a result of these camera bugs.
And let me just go ahead and get on the record here saying if you are filming something with your cell phone, turn your phone sideways. Vertical video is horrible. Your phone, it gets a better picture when you flip it sideways. It's made to fit that screen. It's just better.
So when the bullets are flying and you're trying to get a good picture, make sure you turn it sideways.
Yeah. I mean, seriously, think about it. I mean, have you ever thought about it? Have you ever noticed how some videos they're small and you have to hold it upright and you try to turn it sideways and it's not good. But if you turn it sideways, it's like perfect.
Yeah, and when they show them on TV, they always got like a little bit more image on each side of the actual image in the middle, and then they got a little bit more image on each side.
That's vertical from vertical video. People need to stop doing that. That should be a crime. That should be a misdemeanor.
Where you're charged with vertical video. The penalty is you have to go to prison, and you'll be doing the prison horizontal bop. Then you'll learn to go horizontal.
That'll teach them. So, as I said,
everybody wants to do the horizontal bop.
It's Bob Seger?
Yeah.
Okay. I'm back. So, as I said, no, you don't have a duty to act, but there are certain people that do have a duty to act. Parents have a duty to rescue their minor child. Employers have a duty to rescue their employees reasonably. And spouses have a duty to rescue each other. And that's pretty much in all U.S. jurisdictions.
Now, to what extent is that, though?
Well, because these different classes have like a fiduciary duty to each other. So that's where that stems from.
Well, I'm thinking like if you're standing outside a burning house and that thing's pretty much engulfed and you've got a child or a wife inside, you better run back in those flames or you might be charged.
No. And let's go back to that whole reasonable person standard. I mean, do you need to have to put your own life in certain death to do that? No. We're talking about like a situation where your spouse is in a pool drowning and you're standing there with a buoy and a rope and you're just like, huh, how about that? You know, that's
you doing okay there?
Yeah. So I thought you knew how to swim. Huh? Guess not. So no, that's what I'm talking about. It's more like situations like that.
I got two stories along those lines.
Oh, well, do tell.
One of them was when my mother and father were a young couple before I was ever born, and they went fishing somewhere down on Gulf Shores, and they were standing out on a dock, and my mom fell off the dock into the water, and so she falls down in the water, and Dad's standing there, and he goes, well, hell, I guess I better get in and get her, but I better take off my watch, and I better get my wallet out of my pocket before I jump in. He's there getting his stuff off. In the meantime, somebody else had already jumped in and pulled her out.
Now, that's the best right there.
But he was like, well, I got to take care of the watch. Got to take care of the wallet. And then one other time, Mary and I, when we were moved to Waycross, we were staying in the local Holiday Inn before we could get into our house. And we're sitting there, and we see a guy and his daughter. And he's trying to help her swim, and she's scared. She doesn't want to swim. And he's getting her to go down in the deep end, and she's saying, no, she's scared. Here, I'll help you. Well, they're there, and he's trying to help her, and they both go underwater.
Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, they went under. And I jumped up. Mary's like, don't interfere.
Don't interfere?
Don't interfere.
Don't get involved, Tommy.
Teaching her how to swim. It's none of your business. And I'm like, they're drowning. They're not drowning. I said, they're drowning. And so I went in and there they were on the bottom of the pool. And I grabbed the little girl first and handed her up. And one of the other guys pulled her out of the water. And then I went back down and grabbed him and helped him up to the surface. And we get to the surface over the side. And he kind of pushed me away. He goes, I had it under control. I didn't need any help.
Yeah.
As he's spitting water out all over the place.
Well, let me put you back down the bottom then.
But the mother jumped up at that point. She came over. She said, I told you to leave her alone, you idiot.
Yeah, people don't realize if you're trying to save somebody, if you don't know how to do it, even like trying to save a child will put you under too. Because you're not used to...
Right. I mean, you're not a very good swimmer, you might be able to get by just kind of dog paddling around. But if you're trying to keep somebody up that's fighting and thrashing about because they're scared, you're in trouble.
Yeah.
I had my lifeguard training. That's how Mary and I met, when we were both lifeguards at the pool.
Yeah. I was lifeguard as well.
You were a few years behind us.
That's true. I was. I'm going to talk a little bit about lifeguards too, as well as the Good Samaritan law comes into play here in a minute.
What a coincidence that I bring up that story, huh?
Yeah. As I said earlier, some states have laws that basically you have to notify law enforcement or call 911 if you see something. And some jobs have mandatory reporting for like suspected child abuse and things like that too. So those are like
school teachers, right?
Yeah. School teachers are mandatory reporters.
Healthcare workers.
Yeah. They have to report it if they see it. So there's sometimes, and this is kind of not really Good Samaritan law, but it kind of related to it somewhat, because this is like when you have certain duties to do things like that.
Well, doesn't it also relieve them of any responsibility if they were to report their suspicions and then it ends up there wasn't anything and that the people can't come back and sue them? I mean, if they acted in a reasonable manner, they saw these bruises or somebody told them something or something, and to the best of their knowledge, it was true, then they have a duty to act. And that way it kind of relieves them of any responsibility from the person can't come back and sue them or something.
Yeah, it's like, I don't have a choice. I had to do it. It's my responsibility. Yeah. But I think pretty much for the most part, if you act in a reasonable manner, you're going to prevail in any kind of lawsuit, no matter what you do. As a general rule of thumb in your life, act reasonable, you're probably not going to get sued.
That's still asking a lot for about 85% of the human population.
So generally, like I said, a good Samaritan in legal terms refers to somebody who's rendering aid in an emergency situation to an injured person on a voluntary basis. So if the volunteer comes to the aid of an injured or ill person who's a stranger, then the person who gives that aid owes the stranger a duty of being reasonably careful. So as again, going back to reasonableness, you have to be reasonable about it. So a person is not obligated by law to do first aid in any states unless it's part of their job description. But then at that point, you know, they might not be a volunteer at that point. They might be acting in their job capacity. So,
well, now I've always heard when I worked for the railroad, they made most all the supervisors take CPR training.
Right.
So if you ever needed it, you know, on the railroad for any reason, it was my understanding that, you know, if you don't know CPR training, somebody's in need of it, nobody can hold you responsible if you don't go give it when you've never been trained.
Yeah.
And then if you're certified, you're not obligated to go act. You don't have to go administer CPR, but if you do, you have to finish it and you better do it right, because you can be held liable if you administer CPR and you've been trained in it and you're certified, and not necessarily just because a person dies, but if you did something wrong, you know, you crack their sternum or something like that.
Well, sometimes that actually happens if you're doing it right. I always heard.
Well, I've heard where it happens. Yeah.
So it's not necessarily a bad thing if you save a person's life, crack their sternum. And I think, again, if we go back to, I don't know if that's a law or not now, Tommy, but if you go back to the whole public policy reason for it, you think about it, you got somebody who goes in there and starts trying to do CPR and they have no idea what they're doing. Somebody's going to stand back and not go help, even though they might know what they are doing because somebody else is already doing it. So that's why you might hold that person responsible somewhat, because, I mean, that's almost kind of an unreasonable act. It's like, well, what did you think you were doing there?
Do you know CPR? No, but I stayed at a Holiday Inn Express last night.
You were tickling their ear. That hadn't... It's not going to bring them back.
I was trying to get a stimulated response.
So one thing, too, is generally where you have an unconscious victim, they can't respond, the Good Samaritan can help on the grounds of implied consent. Basically, it's the person's unconscious, they can't consent to it. So it's implied that they would want you to help them.
Hey, is it okay if I do this? And you take their head in both hands and shake it, nod it up and down. He said yes.
He said okay.
He nodded.
But if the victim is conscious and can respond, then you got to ask and see, hey, is it okay if I help you? So, well, I mean, think about it.
If you see is it okay if I save your life? No, get away, you Samaritan.
If you see somebody if you see somebody choking and you're like, hey, are you choking? And they're like, no. And they're like, I think you are. And you start grabbing and doing the Heimlich maneuver. I mean, that's assault.
Well, especially if it was the Heimlich maneuver.
Yeah, absolutely.
That would really be assault.
Salty.
That's a completely different story.
So, now if you make the person's condition worse, the Good Samaritan could actually be held responsible for that.
I got to say, best thing to do with that knife is push it all the way in. It gives you a clean cut. It's easier to heal that way.
We're going to go ahead and lop that finger all the way off.
So it's less chance of infection.
Yep, and now we can put it in milk. So a good example of this would be like if you find somebody unconscious at a traffic accident and you decide to pull them away from the wreckage of the vehicle. Even if there wasn't really a reason to do so, the vehicle wasn't on fire. There wasn't any kind of traffic where they might get hit. And you basically made their situation worse. So you would be responsible for any extra injury they suffered because you decided to pull them away from that situation.
Like if you moved them and when you did, they became paralyzed or something.
Exactly. And there was no reason for you to do it. Now, if there was a reason to pull them away, like the vehicle's on fire, or they're laying in the middle of a lane of traffic and there's semis whizzing by or something like that, and you're afraid they might get run over, then you would be protected from any injuries they suffered when you were pulling them away, even if it did something bad to them, because it'd be reasonable to go ahead and pull them away from that burning vehicle. Mm-hmm. And so that's a general kind of tenet of Good Samaritan law as well, is that, you know, and again, it's reasonable. You got to evaluate the situation. When you learn first aid, CPR, the first thing they tell you to do is check the scene. You know, it's first thing, you want to make sure the scene's safe. So,
gotta lay in there in the middle of the road. Hey, speed bump, you want me to help you out? I'm looking for consent here.
Now, Good Samaritan laws don't apply to somebody who is rendering emergency care or rescue advice or assistance during the course of their regular employment, like somebody who works as a healthcare provider, first responders,
EMTs,
things like that, and lifeguards. Mm-hmm. So, basically, if it's your job to do that, then you're not protected under this Good Samaritan law. Now, you might have some other protections. I'll talk about that a little bit later under sovereign immunity, which is a different kind of different theory of protection for somebody. So, interesting story. I worked as a lifeguard too, mm-hmm. And there was a couple times where while I was working, I saw somebody drowning and had to swim out in the ocean, grab him, pull him back in, and bring him to the shore. And that was like part of my job. So, you know, I wouldn't have been covering or getting Good Samaritan laws.
You were like a Baywatch guy. You were at the beach. I was just at a swimming pool.
I'll be ready. So, and then there's other times where actually it happens probably 3 or 4 times. I've been out surfing where I've been out there just, you know, riding the waves, paying attention to my own deal or whatever. And I'll see somebody out there swimming. I'll notice they'll get a little bit too far out. I'll notice they'll start having a little bit of trouble and they'll start going under a little bit. And this is like in not like a super touristy area. This is like in a kind of residential area where there's like one lifeguard for a mile or two. And they're just kind of watching the whole area. And I've actually paddled up to him with my surfboard and said, hey, give him the surfboard and I'll drag him in. And that's happened like 3 or 4 times where I've had to do that.
Hey, so, I was out catching some tasty waves and I saw this dude and he was way out too far and he was getting gnarly. So I towed him in, dude.
Went just like that.
Let's go get toasted.
That's how I told the story with some Coronas on the beach fire afterwards to Bodie and Roach. No, but that would be covered under Good Samaritan laws.
All right.
So, because it wasn't my job to do it.
Be the Good Surfer Samaritan.
Yeah, the Good Surfer Samaritan. And actually, that's not that really rare of a thing for surfers to rescue people like that. A lot of times, surfers are almost like these kind of guardians of the ocean that pluck unsuspecting people from danger.
Pull them out of the jaws of great white sharks and stuff like that, huh?
Well, not really like that, but, oh, you know, when they get pulled out by a riptide or something like that, and they're trying to swim back in directly through the riptide, and you're like, oh, that's not going to end well. Mm. It's like, go horizontal outside the riptide, then swim in. But they don't know that.
They should make a superhero guy there. Surfer dude. He saves people from washing out to sea.
We got Aquaman. He's kind of like the same thing.
Or is this, isn't it the Silver Surfer?
Silver Surfer. He's an alien.
Well, that's all right. He can still do it. But he does it on ice, doesn't he?
Silver Surfer?
Doesn't he shoot like a thing of ice out there and go on it? I'm not a comic book guy, so I don't know, but I thought I saw that.
I'm not sure what it is either. Some sort of silver substance.
I thought it was ice.
It could be ice. He's an alien. He can do what he wants.
Whatever. Somebody will tell us.
Now, doctors are covered under Good Samaritan laws generally, and that's as long as the aid is rendered outside the hospital and they're providing services outside the regular practice of medicine. So it's not like...
Like a house call.
Yeah, it's not like a house call. Like if a doctor sees somebody at a auto accident and they treat the person there at the scene until EMS arrives,
right,
they're going to be protected. So the whole thing about doctors like not wanting to help when they're a little scared and it's like, don't want to help, don't want to get involved, don't want to get sued.
Well, but according to Sydney, the only exception to that is if it's something beyond their training.
Right.
Like if you're a podiatrist and you just look at bad toes all day long and now here's some guy bleeding and lung collapsed and everything. Well, you're a doctor, go over there and do something.
How do his feet look?
I can take care of that ingrown toenail, but we're out of luck with the rest of him.
Right. Now, I mean, I think for basic care, you know, checking his pulse and things like that, I mean, I'm sure a podiatrist would be just peachy Perry.
Well, I've never seen it happen in real life, but you have that all the time in movies or TV shows where somebody falls over in the theater and somebody jumps up on stage. Is there a doctor in the house?
Yeah.
Yeah, right. Nobody's ever jumped up there and said, is there a lawyer in the house?
We have a contract that has an ambiguous term. Is there a lawyer in the house?
It's immediate. It's an immediate need. It's a coronary situation.
It's a corollary situation. No. So doctors are protected. And again, if you think about this, and not to talk about too much, but public policy, if you want people who practice medicine who are doctors to have the ability to help people out there without the fear of getting sued, like under their malpractice insurance for something they do. So yeah.
I saw it just last night. There was a lady in Target that suddenly had a searing pain. She was like 8 months pregnant or something. And she suddenly had a searing pain and her water broke and she instantly started going into labor. And it just so happened that standing in line behind her at Target was a lady that was a labor and delivery nurse. So she helped her deliver the baby safely and everybody was okay. But what are the chances that that's who's standing in line behind you when that happens?
That's why you shop at Target, not Walmart.
Labor and delivery nurses don't go there.
I don't know.
Seemed like she was right on Target.
She was. I can't think of any other Target catchphrases, so I'm just going to leave it at that. Good Samaritan laws do not generally apply to firefighters and EMS while they're on duty, and that's pretty much standard. There is some protection by other doctrines, as I said, like sovereign immunity. So basically, if they're acting in their capacity for the government, then there's going to be governmental protections for them since they're acting in that capacity. So this is as long as they do it reasonably and within their standard operating procedures. So, you know, as long as you don't get some EMS guy up there that says, well, you know, the book says we should put this guy on a backboard, but I say we strap him to the back of this Harley and just see what happens.
Let's drag him by the bumper.
Yeah. So now there are some questions about whether or not a person is off duty or not for this kind of thing. So basically, like, think about if there's emergency personnel and they've been going like off duty and they're going to and from work where they might be covered under workers' compensation law, but then they stop for some sort of accident. Then it's like, okay, well, does it apply then? Because basically workers' compensation law means they're on the job.
Mm-hmm.
So they would get coverage for that, but then they don't get coverage for Good Samaritan because they're on the job, or are they not on the job? So you get these interesting situations where you have different kinds of laws and theories applying. So, and again, it's going to vary state by state. So,
well, you would just hope that if somebody was trying to do the right thing and help out
and acting within their training and their capabilities, that nothing bad would come out of it.
Right. But I think a general idea for that whole dichotomy between workers' comp and Good Samaritan law is that basically if their workers' comp benefits available to them and they're a first responder, then they're probably not entitled to that Good Samaritan benefit. I mean, that just kind of makes sense to me. You should, you know, because they're getting the benefit of the protection for workers' comp, so.
So they're basically still under the rules of this is your job.
Yeah.
You have to do it.
Yeah, I think so. At least. That'd be my theory. According to Mike.
All right, counselor.
So technology's actually forced some laws to change, too, and kind of improvise things. Because now we have AEDs everywhere. Do you know what an AED is?
Those are those electronic defibrillators, exactly. Automatic electronic defibrillators or whatever.
Like automatic external defibrillator.
Is that what it is? And they put them on there and they tell you when it's charged or something like that. And it administers, it takes a reading of the patient and then administers the proper electrical charge to hopefully restart their heart, right?
Yeah, it's basically what they do. You put the sensors on them and it takes a reading and tells you like, okay, no charge advised, or it says send charge. So as long as you're using that AED reasonably, then you're going to be protected for it. Now, if it says don't send charge and you're like, send charge anyway, it says charge not advised, you say send charge anyway.
Damn, I want to see what happened.
Yeah. Then, you know, you might be running into a little bit of trouble there. If you go rogue with your AED.
Don't go rogue with your AED.
Yeah, then it's not good.
just run around town slapping it on people.
Now, if you take a CPR class or first aid class, they'll always go over this kind of information with you about when you have a duty to act and these different kinds of things. Yeah, so we'll kind of go into that. So once you get the training, you get a better idea about probably your state individual. So these laws, like I said, are super, super different from state to state. But the basic theory is that if you're a volunteer and you see a stranger on the side of the road, you want to help them and you're reasonable about it, you're probably going to be fine. So now there was a couple issues that popped up on Facebook. I think one of the posts was about there was a guy who was robbing a gas station with a gun, and some guy came up behind him to stop him and like started stabbing him.
Yeah, they got in a fight. I don't know if that was his own knife or if that was the robber's knife or whatever. Yeah,
it wasn't exactly clear.
I think the robber had a knife. The robber was armed in some manner.
Yeah.
And he jumped in there, and they had a heck of a fight, and he stabbed the robber several times.
Yeah. Now, I mean, that's I don't know if that falls under Good Samaritan so much as it's almost like defense of others.
Well, like, I don't know. It's hard to figure that out because when you're, you know, the clerk at the store, or it's the same way when I was a bank teller, they told you if anybody comes in to rob the place, just give them whatever they want. Don't try to apprehend them. Don't try to fight with them and everything. Now, I didn't listen to that. If somebody had come in, I had my plan. I had my rolls of quarters there that I was ready to take them on with. But you don't, you know, they teach the clerk, don't do anything. So by this guy stepping in, he could have escalated the situation to where the clerk and him got hurt, you know, by him entering into it. So while it seemed like a good idea, and I guess it worked out okay for him and the clerk, it could have made things worse.
Yeah, absolutely. When you were talking about the response, it made me think of a movie Reservoir Dogs by Quentin Tarantino. Have you ever seen that?
I saw that. I've seen that several times.
It says something like, when you're dealing with a store like this, they're insured. They're not supposed to give you any resistance whatsoever. If you get a customer or an employee who thinks he's Charles Bronson, take the butt of your gun and smash their nose in. Everybody jumps. He falls down screaming. Blood squirts out of his nose. Nobody says anything after that. So it's like, it makes me think of that, like, you know,
yeah,
you get somebody buck up to you, just, well, smash that guy's face in. Yeah, that'll show everybody else.
That stops the uprising at that point.
Yeah. I've never actually had any kind of training like that as far as where I was in a position where it was likely for me to get robbed. So I've never been advised by an employer, like, just give him the money.
Yeah, that's what they normally will tell you. Just cooperate, give them what they want, and get them out of there.
I mean, I was actually robbed kind of one time. I was a delivery guy for a sandwich and sub shop. And so I went to this one neighborhood, and it was pretty rough. And there was a bunch of people outside. And I only took a couple bucks change with me, just enough. I walked up, and I set my drink carrier down, and I pulled out the sandwiches. And the guy and said, well, I think that's mine. I was like, do you have the cheesesteak? He's like, yeah, the cheesesteak. So I hand it to him, and I hand it to him, and he just, like, turned and walked off. And I was like, hey, it's whatever. And he's like, don't worry about it. Mm. And somebody else had grabbed my drink carrier and walked off with it. And I was just like, yep, okay, I'm out of here. I just walked away.
Nice to meet you.
Yeah. I was like, this is not worth it.
We'll be back.
So I was not going to push it. So,
well, you know, in that, because somebody brought up the point in that thread somewhere along the line that, like, if the guy was standing there with a knife threatening the cashier, and then you walk up and you pull out a gun, well, you can't use the gun. You have to use equal force. If that guy has a knife, you can only use a knife. That cannot be true.
It's not true.
I mean, but you hear that. People say it has to be equal force. Oh, here, let me put my gun down while I go home and grab a knife so I can come back and be equal to you.
Well, it does have to be equal force. But you got to think, a knife is a deadly weapon.
So deadly force is deadly force.
Deadly force is deadly force. More people actually die. You're more likely to die from a stab wound than you are from a gunshot wound.
Hmm.
So.
I did not know that.
Yeah. That is completely a statistic that I cannot back up by any numbers, but there you go.
Well, if you think that you have to have equal force, then you have never seen Indiana Jones. You know the scene where the guy comes out there doing all the fancy sword play all around? Yeah. And he just stands there and looks at him and then just pulls out the gun and blows him away.
Yeah. Well, there's a scene in the second one, Temple of Doom, where it's the same thing and he reaches for his gun, but it's not there.
Yeah.
And it's kind of a little callback to that scene.
And you know that scene was improvised?
Oh, was it really?
Yeah. He was supposed to get into this big throwdown fight with him and everything with his whip and the other guy's sword, but he was under the weather because, you know, sometimes when you get to the tropical locations, it doesn't agree with you. He was under the weather. So when it came time for that to start, he just like pulled out the gun. I was like, oh, hell with it. And did that. And they liked it so much, they kept that.
That's a good scene. One interesting thing we were talking about, we were actually talking with Sydney upstairs before we came down to the studio. And she was talking about what she would do as a doctor. And they were talking about how it would be improper for her as a doctor to perform like a tracheotomy on somebody like George Clooney did in ER with like a straw mm-hmm. if somebody was choking. And because that's not something as a general practice doctor that she does on a daily basis.
Yeah, she doesn't perform any kind of surgery.
Yeah.
And that would be considered surgery.
Yeah, which I think that's kind of interesting. Mm-hmm. I didn't really think about that.
Yeah, that's what they have to stay within the scope. That's where we get back to the guy with the examining his feet at the wreck and you can't do anything about his jugular vein spurting blood out.
When she was saying that, though, all I could think about was the movie Police Academy.
Yeah.
Remember those?
Oh, yeah. There was a bunch of them.
There was a scene where...
Steve Guttenberg?
Yeah. There was a scene where one of the instructors says something. He goes, any of you have any special skills that I should know about? And Tackleberry. Remember Tackleberry? He was like the real gung-ho guy, and he always wore like the glasses, and he was like real... Like, gung-ho is the best way to describe him. And he's like asking about special skills. He goes, I just learned to perform an emergency tracheotomy with a steak knife, sir. Everybody just kind of looks at him and just goes back about their business. So whenever I hear about emergency tracheotomies, I always think about Tackleberry.
I've always seen those done in the movies with ink pen.
Yeah.
They'll pull the cartridge out of it and use the clear, you know, shell, outer shell of the ink pen to use for it.
Yeah. I just saw one. I never watched that show Blacklist.
Mm-hmm.
And I just started watching that from the beginning. I think they just did that in one of those scenes.
Yeah. I watched the first two or three seasons, it was good, but after that, it started going downhill.
Yeah.
My opinion. I don't know. Maybe not. I love James Spader, though. James Spader is a star.
He is a great actor.
He really is. He makes that show interesting.
So when it comes to Good Samaritan law, there's going to be a lot of stuff to look at as far as your state, and it's going to be very state-specific. The only real, I think, guiding principle that you need to know is be reasonable. I mean, I think that's how you should live your life, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Open up your fortune cookie. It says, be reasonable.
That's right. Live your life. Be reasonable. All fortune cookies should have that in there. I don't know if it would do any good.
Well, I think that's going to bring us to
Legal Briefs.
Legal Briefs is the part of the show where we talk about different legal terms. And usually I ask Tommy what they mean. And he gives me an answer. And he's been knocking out of the park here recently. So,
well, I had a good week last week. I don't remember the week before that. That week before that was 2 weeks ago. I can't remember that far.
Why? Okay, this is going to be kind of a theoretical question.
Oh, no. Theory of relativity.
Now, there's a phrase that I used several times during this podcast, and it applied to why we have a certain law. So why do we have Good Samaritan laws?
Public policy.
Exactly. And what is public policy?
That means it's something that's enacted for the good of the general public.
Right. And it's something that generally, as the public, we want people to be able to do this kind of thing because it just makes sense.
Right. So. I agree.
Now, generally, public policy arguments are pretty weak as far as like trying to change law and things like that. But as far as a rationale for a law, it's very important because you always want to look at and see what the public policy is for a certain law or something like that. Duty to act.
Duty. Duty to act.
Or duty to rescue. We'll do the other one. Well, two duties.
I guess there's two duties?
Yep.
Nobody cleaned up their duties, huh?
Double duty.
Oh, no. That it means like if you're an EMT or a policeman or something like that, and you have the capabilities to help somebody, you have to act?
Yep. Now, there's two other people that I think you were kind of surprised about that have a duty to rescue. And under common law,
lifeguard. Family members like a husband and or you have to rescue your kids. You have to rescue your wife, stuff like that.
Yep, rescue your kids, rescue your spouse. So those are
within reason.
Within reason, yeah. Not going into the burning building, probably where you're going to die. Throwing them the life preserver at the side of the pool. Yes.
Now, if you're the first one of the house, you smell smoke, say, everybody out of the house, shoom, and you're gone, and everybody else is still in there struggling. You might have to answer some questions.
It's like George Costanza. He's like, I was clearing a path. I was showing everyone the way out.
Richard Pryor, when he talked about the fire at the Beverly Hills Supper Club, he said all the people were trapped in there because everybody got piled up at the door, and so they were trapped in there, couldn't get out. He goes, now, if I'd have been in there, he said, that wouldn't have stopped me. He said, I'd have just eaten right through everybody's ass that was in front of me. he said, yeah, there's a lot of people burn up, but there's about 10 people in there that got their asses eaten out.
his old stand-up's so funny.
He was hilarious. Oh, man, I grew up on his 8-track tapes, listening to Richard Pryor 8-track tapes. They were hilarious.
Sovereign immunity.
Sovereign immunity, that is immunity granted by your governmental agency or something, if you're acting in regards of your governmental position or something to the best of your ability and something happens.
Yeah, that's it. I mean, the government basically has passed laws which says, we're going to limit our liability.
So we're going to make you immune to prosecution should you be doing your job and something goes wrong.
It's good to be the king.
It's just good to be the king.
And what does AED stand for?
AED, remember I got automated electronic defibrillator. I forget the first word. Automatic electronic defibrillator.
Automatic external defibrillator.
External, that's the word I got wrong. And then I got one of the words wrong.
Yep. That's still, I think they got a passing grade.
All defibrillators are external.
Well, I think you can actually have them installed inside now.
Well, I guess so. They use those little paddles sometimes. The
pacemaker's a defibrillator, isn't it?
But I'm thinking of the ones where they put the gel on them and rub them together, go clear.
Yeah.
And you see them rise up off the ground.
That would be a non-automatic external defibrillator.
Yeah, that is a non, but it's still an external one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I would say that's the most of them. I guess they do have internal ones that people wear. That.
Yeah, I think so. Know,
he's going down. Oh, he's back up.
Yeah, I mean, basically it keeps track of your heartbeat, and if it stops for whatever reason, it goes into defib, it just automatically kicks on. I think there's certain conditions where your people are predispositioned to that.
Mm-hmm. Congenital stuff, huh?
Yep, I guess so. Well, that's going to do it for the Good Samaritan episode.
Well, you know, I had one story that I thought of that was like just the opposite of a Good Samaritan.
What's that?
There was this.
A man is having a few drinks at a bar when he looks over and notices a drunk guy passed out at a table nearby. The bartender tells him the drunk is Mr. Murphy and asks the man if he could drive Mr. Murphy home. Being a somewhat of a good Samaritan, the man agrees. The bartender writes down the address and gives it to him. The man walks over and tries to wake Mr. Murphy up, but Mr. Murphy is groggy and quite drunk. The man helps Mr. Murphy to his feet, and Mr. Murphy falls to the floor in a heap. "Geez," the man says, wondering how anyone could drink so much. He takes Murphy by the arm and practically drags him out to the car. Once there, he leans him against the side of his car while he looks for his keys. Mr. Murphy slides down to the ground. The man finds his keys and manages to get Murphy positioned in the car. He then drives to the address the bartender gave him. He opens the passenger door and helps Mr. Murphy out, and the guy falls to the ground again. Cursing softly now, the man helps him to his feet and practically drags him to the front door. He lets go of Mr. Murphy to knock on the door, and the guy falls down again. Thoroughly fed up with him and really pissed off that he's having to deal with this, he helps him to his feet as Mrs. Murphy answers the door. "Hi, Mrs. Murphy. Your husband had a little too much to drink tonight, so I gave him a ride home." She looked around at him and said, "Well, that was nice of you, but where's his wheelchair?" Mm.
Thanks to everybody for listening, and thanks to MCRB for use of their song, Doctor, Lawyer, Indian Chief.
And thanks to the McElroy Stable of Podcasts for the use of their recording studio. Their podcasts include Mabim Bam, Sawbones, and Still Buffering, as well as many other fine offerings. And please, take the time to rate and review us on iTunes, especially if you liked us. If you didn't, well, then not so much.
You're not supposed to say that.
You always edit that out, though, right?
Usually.
Good.
This has been Court Appointed. I'm Mike Meadows, your co-host. I'm a lawyer and a dude.
And I'm your other co-host, Tommy Smurf. And I...